I'm Clint Holly, the Concrete Cowboy. Welcome to the Lodge Sessions. Today in the Lodge, we have Aaron Civil War, fixture on the Cleveland music scene for the last 15 years, at least as long as I've known him. He's been out there playing in harder-edged bands, but in the last couple of years, he's developed into an acoustic singer-songwriter fueled by his midlife crisis. So, welcome to the Lodge today, Aaron, and let's talk about some music.
Sure.
I use the word midlife crisis because I think that's one of the words that you told me, or that's the phrase you used to describe your current acoustic incarnation. So tell us a little bit about your background, the kind of bands that you played in before. I know the main band that I'm familiar with is the Conservatives. Did you start writing songs for that band, or were you writing songs prior to joining that band?
Yeah, I wanted to be in a band when I was in high school, and I had no musical ability at all. I couldn't play guitar, and I knew a bunch of kids that went on to be in bands we all know, like I knew kids in the Chargers, and I'd get together and try to play guitar with them, and I just sucked. I couldn't play, and you know, they were busy trying to write stuff of their own, and not a lot of patience. But I was always writing songs, and never be able to find a place to play. And I had a real good friend who could play pretty much any instrument. This kid named Steve, and he came over one day to play with me in my basement. And he said, "Here, why don't you try this?" And he tuned my guitar to a totally open D chord. And it was like, all of a sudden, I could play at the speed I was thinking. And it took off from there. You know, I started playing all the time. And so I was writing nonstop. I joined a band right out of high school that needed a singer. Their singer quit, and I played one show with them, and then they fired me. So
the story of rock and roll, right.
So I was pretty much at that moment like fed up and pissed with the whole scene. Like right there, the first obstacle is like, you know, fuck everybody. And so I met Ed Sotelo, who'd been kicked out of a band, and he and I started the Conservatives mostly as a revenge group to
everybody else that had kicked you out of a band.
Yeah, like, oh, we can do it, you know. So we were really anti-scene. We wore three-piece suits and called ourselves the Conservatives, and we wore pomade in our hair, and we wrote really far out there left-wing political songs.
Right.
I was writing songs before I was in bands, and I've always been like a writer in most of the bands I've been in.
Thank you.
Conservatives, there were like three strong songwriters,
right,
which made for a lot of arguing, you know. And later on, I found that I did better and retained friends if I just found really good musicians
and wrote the songs yourself.
And wrote the songs, you know. So
because part of the conservatives too was the performance aspect of it too, because you guys had some unusual performance characteristics too. Weren't you known to duct tape the microphone to your hand or duct tape your face or something like that? Like, I remember
it was a later incarnation.
Okay,
our guitar player quit, and I can't say I blame him, and so we had another guy that wanted to play with us, so he played with us. But true to Cleveland, you know, you couldn't have like a member quit and keep your band and your set, so we had to change everything because one of the principal writers had left.
Right.
So we became Proletarian Art Threat, which was even less accessible. So we managed that.
So your fan base instantly went down then at that point.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. But that was real angular, aggressive, and I would duct tape my eyes closed and duct tape mic to my hand.
And just go out in the crowd.
My dad worked at a TV station, so he would make me mic cables that were like 20 feet long, and I could pretty much find you even if blindfolded. So it was really like literally, you know, the guy that says I'll wrestle you with one hand tied behind my back blindfolded. That's what I did.
Right.
To punk rock. And I got hurt a lot and had a lot of fun.
I got hurt a lot.
I think I hurt a lot of other people.
People, right.
But what's fun about those shows is nobody got sued, you know.
Right.
But I remember these shows from a real different, I was blind and it was loud and I was screaming and I was full on assaulting people. And so for me, the shows were terrifying and really intense. And when I see pictures of those shows or people tell me about that show, of those shows, like people were having a really good time with me.
Right.
And like, you know, mocking me and making fun of the whole, it was, you know, because it wasn't supposed to be macho, it was supposed to be unhinged, and people were unhinged and having fun. So, you know, for me it felt really intense and scary, and everybody else was just having a great time,
having a good time, right,
laughing their heads off.
Right.
The real challenge was going out of town. I didn't know how that would ever, playing in Cleveland, we had our friends here and I knew I wouldn't get body slammed.
Right.
But you know, we went out on the road to play out of town, and it was like, well, how's this going to go in Rochester where I don't know anybody? And people were pretty terrified of us, which was amazing to me because I'm a twerp, you know.
Right. Yeah. Now you mentioned the punk rock part of your influences. What are some of the first songs that you remember that inspired you to say to yourself, like, I can write a song, or this is something I can do, or this song touched me so much that I want to speak like this person spoke to me?
I grew up in a little town in Oklahoma, and my stepdad was a country and western DJ there.
Right.
So I grew up around music, and I think I'm doing the same thing to my kids. Like anybody in a house full of music, it's like, well, that's dad's thing. You know, I heard all this amazing music all the time. I mean,
right,
some pretty bad radio shit too, but, you know, growing up with the Outlaws and Loretta Lynn and all that, you know.
Now, did you find yourself at that point saying, this is not what I'm into?
Yeah, not for me at all. Yeah.
And then later on in your life, you've kind of come back to that and said,
yeah,
like, okay,
exactly,
this stuff
happened.
This stuff is actually pretty relevant to the way I feel. So you got to go through that rejection, rebellion kind of thing.
Yeah, I rejected the whole thing. Yeah. I wanted my stepdad to get me Out of the Cellar by Rat on cassette for my birthday.
Okay.
And he said, that's because all your taste is in your mouth. He's a real bastard, you know? So,
but very pragmatic at the same time.
Yeah, he was right. So I grew up like thinking that, you know, music was impossible. Like, I didn't know how you became a musician, but it certainly wasn't something accessible to people blue collar people in, you know, broke dick lot in Oklahoma, right? I mean, I came from a pretty poor family, and most of the kids in town were better off than our family, and you know, they looked down on me. Into Dead Kennedys because of Too Drunk to Fuck. Like, he totally missed the point.
Right.
But he played me that song and said, that, you know, that's badass. And I heard the Dead Kennedys for the first time because of him. And I had a job of my own at 13, so I had money in my pocket, and I went and bought Bedtime for Democracy and was like, what the fuck is this, you know?
Right.
I mean, these songs are 2 minutes long or less. They're not on a big label. I don't know what this record is, you know. I didn't see any of the familiar, you
like
know,
the Columbia logo, right? Or yeah, RCA, I didn't understand, or anything, you know, like that, right?
I understand. So it became apparent to me that you could make your own music,
right?
And
reach an audience
on your own terms.
Obviously, their music got to Lawton, Oklahoma, somehow.
Yeah, I could go to the I think it was Hastings Books and Records, you know, we had in the strip mall, and I could walk up there and go to a chain store and buy this, and I was blown away. So that opened the door for me, you know. Not only did it, you know, shape me musically, but politically too.
Right.
You know, because it really caused me to question everything around me. I remember my grandma, because I was living with my grandparents at the time, and they were Depression era. And my grandmother threw that cassette away, and I would go buy it again. And she would, I'd hide it somewhere else, and she'd find it and throw it away. And she told me.
Or she was really Depression era. She probably saved it and recorded something else on top of it.
Right, yeah. Or she, like, used it to I don't know, sew something.
To wind some right. thread around or something. Right. Like.
But she told me my grandfather didn't fight in the war and sacrifice his health so folks could talk like that. And I was like, that's exactly why he did, you know?
Right.
What are you talking about?
Just like the football player, though, she kind of missed the point.
Yeah,
of
people
what
miss the point a lot.
Well, yeah, I guess that's kind of life in general. But mm-hmm. So when did you leave Oklahoma? When did you come to Cleveland?
I moved here when I was 15, so right. It would have been 88.
Okay.
And that's when Gusto Inc. was booking the Euclid Tavern, and so you could really only rely on seeing punk shows. What was it, Monday nights or Tuesday nights?
Okay.
They had one show a week. And
devoted to that kind
yeah,
of that kind of music.
AmRep, you know, Hess was booking. And
right.
The first time I walked in there, I was 15, and I was with these really older kids that were just fucking terrifying to me, these big, muscular punk rockers and skinheads and shit. And they were like, you know, you're going to see the Bad Livers with us. And I'm like, okay.
Because you're afraid more just, of what they're going to do to you if you don't
yeah,
go see
the Bad Yeah, I was just afraid of everybody, you know. So I went with them, and I walk in, and I was ready to pay the overprice, and the guy didn't even ask for my ID and stamp me over. And I was ready to pay the underprice. Sorry.
Right.
I got stamped over, and I was like, you know.
Well, I can drink beer now.
Holy shit, yeah. So that also opened the door for me. You know?
So then at age 15, then that's when you started going to those kind of shows. Then at what age, you said it was still in high school that you put your first band together then.
That was after high school.
That was after high school?
Yeah.
Okay.
Honey, what's your 20 destination gone? ETA never again. The right we took was wrong. You can lock me out of the trailer if that's what you want. I'll just sleep out in the guest car, the one that's up on blocks. This can't go on.
So one of the other things I've noticed as we've recorded some of these songs, and we've recorded some songs before even today, your songs are stories. There's usually a story in the song or an observation.
Components of it, yeah.
Yeah, from a point of view. Now, in your songs, do you typically think that those are your point of view, or do you put yourself in the head of somebody else in the situation that you're writing about?
A little of both.
Right.
I mean, there's truth in every joke and every song.
Right.
So there's pieces of arguments or, you know, that I've had with my wife in some of those songs or
right.
jokes my buddies have told me or, you know, but I haven't done any of those things.
Do you feel like you're the main character in those songs?
Oh, that's
or
hard.
Is it somebody else?
In the songs, it's somebody else.
Okay.
I'm telling a story in the songs.
Right.
You know.
And then in terms of, like you said just recently in our conversation right here, nobody wants to watch a 40-year-old guy sing about politics. And we know that's...
Unless you're Bob Dylan, but then you're 70.
Well, yeah, now he's over 70. So how do you think politics plays into music these days? Is it still the force that helps move people and drives change? Or is it just entertainment these days? Have we lost that element where music really makes a difference?
That's a really bigger question than...
Than we have time for here.
Well, then I can speak to. But
well, I mean, in your opinion, I mean, you've been like on both sides of that fence, though.
It's not like it used to be where, right. you know, I mean, I saw a guy the other night opening for a friend's band, and like his one song he sang over and over, it's going to be all right. I'm like, it's not. Are you kidding me? It's not going to. Have you looked around at the world you live in? It's not going to be all right.
And then right.
another thing he said was, time is on my side. I'm like, you're just ripping off other people and singing nonsense. Time is, everyone knows that's not true. I mean,
yeah, that deck is stacked against all of us.
You right. can willfully pretend that time is on your side and, you know, put the blinders on, but
right.
I don't know that. I mean, part of me is jaded because I've been at it so long, but then, you know, honestly, you look at Occupy and that was millennials.
Right.
You know, and how the fuck would I know what they're listening to?
Right.
I have no clue what young people are motivated by right now.
Right. Well, especially politically, too.
I mean, politically, I see it. Yeah, they were told to go to school and work hard, and they did, and they get out, and there's nothing. It's all been stolen out from under them. So I can see the political there. You know, I can understand Occupy, you know, Zuccotti Park and all that. And
right.
I can understand why Sanders has the youth vote. And also my vote. Now, why that hasn't resulted in Fugazi of today, I don't know, you know?
Yeah, because, I mean, their time was what? They were late 80s, early 90s? Is
yeah.
that their kind of their high point?
But for all I know, there's great political rock and roll happening, and we just don't know because we're old dudes, you know?
Past my exit, lose what I'm doing while I'm doing it. I've been standing here folding this shirt for an hour. I've been staring at my laptop without comprehension. Work have sure been polite, 'cause I don't sleep at night. I hear a voice says that chain smoking cigarettes, opening mail without reading it. I think my kids are outside, I haven't checked in a while. Took off my shoes and I went outside, walked to a place I didn't recognize, 'cause I I am following a light.
I'm Clint Holly. I'm the Concrete Cowboy. I've been sitting here with Aaron Civil War talking about music and talking about songwriting. And thanks for coming down today.
Oh, thanks for having me.